Wael Elassadi, welcome to KBOO.
Thanks for having me.
And fairly recently, a host of...
One Land, Many Voices.
One Land, Many Voices.
It's been a couple of years.
Anyway, he's graduated from that to many other activist roles. He's also a writer. He co-founded Students United for Palestinian Equal Rights. He's been a longtime member of the International Socialist Organization. Recently, he helped organize the PS Portland State University May Day rally in March, joined the larger citywide May Day rally. He did a widely distributed piece on May Day, on the May Day celebration rally, titled Hard Facts About Portland's May Day Riot. The riot was, of course, in quotes. It was first published in the Socialist Worker. Wael described it as a police riot, as did most of the march organizers and marches. He also critiqued the Black Bloc in Portland for giving the police pretext to go on the attack. So, Wael, you've written on the police. You've also studied the police. You've thought about the police in relationship to revolutions. Remind us first what happened on May Day here in Portland, and then we'll turn to what I see as the most serious question now faced by humanity and the left today, that is, how do we save the planet? How our movements must relatively soon gain political power to reconstruct our whole productive and economic system. It's a big job, and also, of course, the ways of daily living in the rich world, and that, of course, is to stop global warming. But this is much less likely to succeed if the police and military and National Guard, among others, stay loyal to capitalist elites. Anyway, Wael, tell us about May Day and the police and Black Bloc.
Sure. Yes, I think the first thing that has to be said about May Day is that there was a lot of incredible organizing that went into it. The PSU rally brought together a lot of student groups and unions at PSU that were able to rally and celebrate. And then the May Day... Portland May Day Coalition did an amazing job organizing groups around town. And about 1,500 people in total ended up rallying in Chemainsky Park with a lot of great speeches. And it was that was excellent. Now, what happened next was that the march begins with the large number of protesters chanting and going along the route. And this march was permitted. The organizers had applied and gotten a permit for the march. And the police from the beginning had come heavily militarized and were in riot gear. And about halfway through the march, it appears that a few individuals from the back of the march had thrown a Pepsi can and possibly, you know, a few smoke bombs in the direction of the police as the march was proceeding along. And the police essentially used these isolated acts as cover to carry out what was essentially an all-out militarized assault on the entire May Day march. So at that point, they revoked the permit of the march. They announced this over loudspeaker. They said anyone remaining in the area would be subject to arrest and that all protesters had to leave or get on the sidewalk. And the march organizers attempted to steer people onto the sidewalk. But of course, this was Monday in downtown Portland, right around where it was very busy. Half of the people were able to fit on the sidewalks. The other half weren't. And within 5 minutes of making that announcement, the police essentially did something that was utterly reckless, which was shoot tear gas canisters and percussion sound grenades into the dense crowd of over 1,000 protesters that was downtown, as well as nearby pedestrians and residents of the city. And from there, what ensued was chaos as people essentially fled from the police and into corners. And the media, for the most part, unfortunately, has echoed the line of the police, which was that there were violent, that May Day had turned into a riot, that things were being burnt, that glass was being broken, and they had to go in to essentially subdue a riot and restore order to the city. But in reality, what happened was that there were some objects thrown by what I would call irresponsible individuals, but these were minor isolated instances from an otherwise large peaceful march that was already heading back to its destination, and that the youths used that as a propagation to essentially escalate the situation. And if there is, you know, if we can call what happened a riot, this was a riot that was essentially instigated by the Portland police. And very irresponsible. We had contingents of children, disabled persons at the beginning of the march, as well as children and families dispersed throughout the march, and the police simply began to shoot tear gas into that. And it's after that that the mass of the marchers dispersed, and then what was left was a street battle, essentially, between the Black Bloc and the police.
How do you understand what could have motivated the police to, in fact, create this riot out of what was a peaceful march? It seems to me that they've been, over the last several years, and particularly after the Battle of Seattle, the police have enormously militarized and have become seen themselves as, in much more than in the past, the protectors of property, the protectors of downtown, the people who have to disperse these marchers, because who knows what they're going to do, and they are just ready to do violence. Furthermore, they select police for their squads out of those who volunteer to get in there and do battle, it seems to me, is the way it works. What do you see as the sort of the, how did it come to this, that the police are operating in this way in Portland?
Well, you know, the police in this country from the very beginning, their role was to protect property. So they emerge out of essentially slave patrols in the South, and then in the cities, as a large working class begins to emerge in the cities, they are organized as a way to essentially to protect the property of the wealthy, right, from strikes, and essentially to control the mass of the people from being able to organize in public. So that's been their role really since the founding of this country, was to protect the interests of what we call today the 1%. And but what certainly has happened in really in the past 30 years, and that's accelerated in the past 50 years, is a high level of militarization and organization of the police. And that begins on the one hand and as part of the new Jim Crow. That is a way to roll back the movements of the 60s and essentially to criminalize a Black population in this country, and then go on the assault against what existed of the social safety net. The police needed to be, from the ruling class perspective, needed to be more militarized for this. So that's when you begin to see the level of weapons increase. And then this was amplified by the war on terror, by which there was, as a result of the Islamophobia, the war on terror rhetoric, there was cover provided for an outright militarization of the police. So they regularly receive receive military gear from the military, and the budgets of militarized police equipment has increased since that time.
Yeah, and they're trained and motivated to break up marches and demonstrations. And as long as they're organized the way they are, and they have this sort of military command that puts them in motion, then they go through this the same way when they're making an arrest. Eight guys will pile on some poor person, throw them down, handcuff them, and then kick them a little bit for, I don't know, pleasure or whatever the reason. They go through their routines. And the routine is to disperse people and terrorize them. In any event, that's a real problem, though, that the police have been so socialized, in fact, and now are accepting that kind of behavior. We'll continue in this line. This is the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm Bill Resnick, talking to Wael El-Assadi. We just discussed May Day in Portland, crackdown on dissent, and the great moving rights show of the police occurring in many, many forms, including we see the great support from the police ranks for Donald Trump in the last election. This weekend, Wael and I discussed how dangerous this is today, because in the not-too-distant future, maybe 10 years, maybe 40 or 50, climate change will very likely, according to the findings of climate scientists, climate change will create a combined economic-environmental crisis that could only be ended in ways to save humanity by totally reconstructing our production system, lifeways in the rich world. And that's then going to create a great struggle between the forces of the left, who are going to fight for a democratic, sustainable system, and on the other side, the forces of the right, who will want to reconstruct on their terms, preserving their power and most of their wealth, of course. And that raises then the issue of the police and military and all the forces of repression and control, because looking at the historical record appears, at least to me, that groups seeking to replace capitalism find it extremely hard, if not impossible, to win if the police and military stay loyal to the capitalist elites, and sometimes they don't stay loyal. You thought about these questions a lot, Wael. How do we look at the police and the need for vast movements that would reconstruct our whole economic system away from the capitalist growth mania?
Yeah, it's a great and big question. I think there's a few things that have to be said right off the bat. First is the U.S. state in particular is one of the most organized and vicious states and ruling classes the world over. So I think the very first fact that we as activists on the left have to understand is that to be able to carry out anything like a social revolution that can transform the system is going to require the participation of masses of people, and not the, you know, not the activities of a self-appointed minority, who's going to do it on our behalf. And so I think the question of how do we engage with masses of people who right now are angry about the bigotry of Trump and help to actually bring more people in the streets, more people in the political organization, because it will take a much larger number than we have right now to be able to even conceive of a challenge to the system. And of course, there's the question of, you know, of then the social force that has the power. And I'll say it briefly, my feelings that it'll take the organized capacity of what are the vast majority of people who work in this country to be able to essentially shut down their greatest power, which is profit, to be able to do this. And that's why I'll say the Black Bloc tactics that are carried out are unproductive, because what they do is they elevate a tactic to the level of a principle and then carry out regardless of the situation or political context. And I think that in this particular situation in Portland, what it did was it placed people in danger unnecessarily. B, it actually ends up isolating the left from the larger number of people who do want to engage in struggle but are not, you know, ready to engage in fights in the police. And then three, I think it was undemocratic. There was a conversation that happened with the march organizers, which asked that this would be a safe space because we wanted immigrants, children, families to participate in this event. And unfortunately, the democratic decisions of the organizers were not carried out. So I think this opens up a question of strategy and tactics in our movement that we really do have to carry out.
Bill Resnick here for the Old Mole, talking to Wael El Asadi on how to somehow neutralize the police. Well, what we're going to have to do, I think we only have another minute. My sense is that you're absolutely right. It's going to take a great mass movement, but that great mass movement could be defeated by genocidal police if they ever get to that. And I think part of our role is to, in some ways, neutralize the police, split the police. The police and the military, and their different organizations, have different interests than their bosses. Now, their bosses are our enemy. The police are just the agents of the enemy, but they also have different interests. I think it's possible to split them away such that they will not turn their guns on the people. That's happened before. And I think another time we're going to have to talk about how to do that. At least it's more likely that we will win if we split the police and military. So you've got the last word.
I'll just say very briefly, I think that's possible if we look at history in regards to the military because of their class composition and the short stints they placed in the military. I think that is impossible with the police. They are trained, organized ideologically to essentially maintain order and attack the working class and oppressed in this country. So the question is not whether we can split them, but rather can we actually cohere the social power to be able to defeat their repression?
Well, that's part of the way of splitting them. They decided that it's more costly than and better to work with these movements than to obey their bosses. But that's another discussion, and it's a very interesting discussion. Thanks a lot for talking to us, Wael El Asadi.
Thank you, Bill.
Right.